it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Merrill in the air to left field. Beck is back. He's on the track at the wall. Beck will watch. It's going to go. Jackson Merrill, opposite field home run. 2-0. Padres in the fourth inning as Merrill Madness makes its return to San Diego.
Yeah, Padres get right with the Colorado Rockies lending quite a bit of help last night. 2-0 the final at Petco Park. It's finally a Friday. We welcome you into Gwynn and Chris. Chris Ello and Tony Gwynn Jr. down at Petco Park. He's getting ready for game two of the series tonight. And Matt Scraby alongside here in the Odyssey Palace Studios. It is a Friar Friday, which means we will have our Friar Friday guest coming up in just a little while, and it is going to be Cy Young candidate Nick Pivetta joining us today. Don't have an exact time. Padres are doing some meetings and things, but as soon as Nick gets free from that, he will be joining the show today. Tony, of course, Padres put two runs on the board last night. That's kind of like overkill against the Rockies. I don't really need that many.
I tell you what, you it know? Didn't feel like overkill as that I game
know,
was going on.
I know, it was tight. It was, you know, it took a bloop and a blast, but, you know, the Rockies couldn't even get a bloop. It's pretty hard to believe, frankly, that a major league team has come to Petco Park, played four games this year, and has not scored a single run. I did a little deeper dive on that. They have 13 hits in the four games. As a team, here at Petco Park, the Rockies are batting 109, and their OPS, that is slugging plus on-base percentage, is 274 in the four games. I've never heard of an OPS like that. Padre pitchers have struck out 46 and walked 3. So they've had them completely shut down. They'll try to do it again tonight. J.P. Sears will start for the Friars. Tanner Gordon, who's actually a pretty good rookie, will pitch for Colorado. He's had his ups and downs like a lot of rookies do. But I don't think the Padres care, you know, what the Rockies are bringing right now, Tony. Padres care about the Padres, and they needed to get right, and they did. They got the win.
Yeah, keep it coming with the whole no scoring runs. If you don't score any runs, you can't win.
Yeah.
So taking that all day long. I just think at this point, you're taking any wins in however they come.
Yeah.
You're taking it. And so, obviously, you like to see them score more than two runs against the Rockies. But at the end of the day, they got the win. Cubs right now aren't helping in terms of the Padres closing there. But every win you get is a win closer to a clinching spot. So,
yeah.
Keep them coming.
Yeah, Cubs are ahead 6-4 in the eighth inning against Tampa Bay today. It's the only afternoon game going. Some big games around baseball tonight, including the Giants and Dodgers. You know, I've been watching the Giants and keeping an eye on how far they are behind the Padres. And while I was doing that, I didn't realize that the Giants and the Reds have come within 1.5 games of the Mets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the Giants are very much in this thing all of a sudden. And, you know, again, we're not allowed to say nice things apparently here about Bob Melvin. So I don't want to overstep my bounds.
Chris lives in this weird world.
I don't. Nobody. You say Bob Melvin, people have a negative thing around here, and I don't quite know why they do. I mean, the guy took us to the NLCS and, you know, away from getting to the World Series. But for some reason, I think people remember that next season when things didn't go right.
It was
like everyone was happy to get Bob Melvin out of here and show him the door. But the bottom line is Tony can manage pretty well. And, you know, San Francisco, despite trading players and basically, you know, cashing in, are now a game and a half out of a playoff spot. So we'll be counting on the Giants tonight against the Dodgers. As far as the Padres go, I mean, let's start with Manny. I mean, it's got to be on everybody's mind. He took the extra work yesterday. That is always a step in the right direction.
Yep.
But he's got to have something fall in here. 9 for 69. I think this is the worst slump of his career. Somebody pointed out yesterday, Tony, that over the last 81 games, which is a long time, Manny's OPS in that time is actually under 600. So I don't think we ever question his ability. I know he never loses his confidence in himself. That's what part of what makes him great.
Right.
But everybody has to start, you know, any human being has to start thinking, man, I'd really like to break out of this now.
Of course. I'm sure he was thinking that however many, what, you right. say 81 games? He's probably been thinking that the whole time.
Yeah.
Or just waiting. I just think, you know, unfortunately, this is baseball, and he's not the first one. He won't be the last one. I just, at this point, the fact he's A, acknowledged it, B, has started the work to try to figure it out, you just kind of got to ride it out. I see some of the comments about him, Schilte sitting him or forcing him out. I don't know that helps.
I don't either.
I don't think that helps. Like, no. You're going to take him out of the lineup and you have a better chance to win, even with him at the place that he's at. I don't see that. And so, you know.
No, I don't see taking him out.
Not to mention he's not going to come out anyway.
Right.
And, you know, I think I saw a comment about it. It shouldn't be his decision. You know, you get paid that kind of money, and he's been – you're going to give him the opportunity to make that decision. If they genuinely feel like he is just gassed, as many of you guys are saying out there,
yeah,
they'll try to convince him to have one or to take one, or they may force him to take one. But I don't think that's going to happen.
I fully expect him batting third at third base tonight
without
when the lineups come out. But, okay, we got that one out. But Jackson Merrill. What I see with Jackson Merrill, and I'm not a hitting coach, Tony, but what I see is as soon as I see him get a line drive to left field somewhere, I feel like that's what he's starting to get back into business. And I've seen, you know, some line drives go that way, and now that's followed by, you know, staying on the ball, you know, hooking balls now into the corner, and then Oppo last night. It's a really good sign. You know, he hasn't had the same year he had last year, but that doesn't mean he can't finish up and be the guy he was last year down the stretch.
No, it doesn't. He isn't. And I think that plays a part in, like, where the offense is, right? I don't think he's the only one, right? Manny was having a terrific year, but this has kind of brought it back to, you know, the maybe right at the standard he was last year, maybe a little bit below, right?
Yeah.
Toddy is, I mean, when it's all said and done, is he going to be right where he was the last couple of years? It's starting to look like it, looking at the numbers. But Jackson hasn't been. And a lot of it is due to injury, I would think. He has battled, I wouldn't even call it a sophomore slump. I would say it's due to the fact that he hasn't been out there playing. You saw how...
He hasn't had a healthy season. He hasn't.
No, you saw how out of rhythm he was the first, what, 15 at-bats back when he went 0-for.
Yeah.
But you are starting to see signs. Teams are attacking him at the top of the zone, and he's getting to it. Now, he's going to have to manage that because they're going to just keep expanding up because that's where they had success earlier in the season. But he certainly is starting to show signs that he's starting to return to that form, and I mean, yeah. It couldn't come at a better time.
No, we're all happy about that. I worry about even mentioning this, but you know, Luis Arraez did have 3 hits and drive in a key run last night. Okay, so we'll move on from that because I'm never allowed to say anything good about him. So
real quick about Luis, I think this 3-hit thing. I mean, he's leading the league in 3 hits. Like this is he's done this. I think the question is, can he maintain that stroke? And we're talking like inches. Like when he gets under ball and hits it like in the air, he's done that more than he ever has, I think, in a while. And if he can maintain that path that he had last night, that's also would be really good because that's the other one. I was trying to figure out who the other one was. It's Luis. Luis also is not having the same type here he had last year, and I think that's also why, again, that plays a part in the offense looking the way it is.
Yeah, and it also doesn't mean that he can't hit 400 from here on out because Arraez has that ability.
Right.
We spent a lot of time earlier in the week and maybe last week, Tony, you and I, extolling the incredible contributions that have been made by Gavin Sheets this year. So we don't need to go back there. He has been an unsung hero. But Randy Vasquez is joining him on that list. He's come up now with two big games in a row. And I know it's against the Rockies. But understand how badly they needed those games. They had lost 9 of 11 when he went into Coors Field last week. Then they, you know, dropped two tough games to the Reds, and he wins that one last night. Probably one of his greatest games last night. No walks, 9 strikeouts.
Back-to-back games with no walks.
Yeah, so come on. And again, Vasquez, we talked about it. The guy was taken out, one out away from a win, like 4 times in a row. And yet he just keeps on coming back and saying, give me the ball, I'll give you what I can, I'll give you my best. And then they acquire guys to replace him. Then they send him to El Paso, and he disappears for a month. And then they're like, hey, Randy, sorry about that. We really need you back. And, man, he comes in, and he's really helped. I got to give a guy like that so much credit.
Yeah. I've always liked Randy, man. I thought even when he was going through his early struggles, I just thought that that was part of his process. Like, he needed to go through that. Last night, what was really impressive was his strike-to-ball ratio. I mean, he was pounding the zone. And that's not always something that he's had success in. But him and Ruben and I'm sure Fritzy have worked on, you know, not trying to get the punch out, right? It seems like he'd go 0-2 and then he'd be 3-2 in like 7-8 pitches.
That happened a lot. Yeah.
That did not happen but like 3 or 4 times last night. And they were. It wasn't like he went from 0-2 and then 3 uncompetitive pitches. I mean, the hitters were kind of battling him a little bit. And that's because he's not a punch-out guy, which made the 9 punchies so impressive. I mean, he was in the zone, and he pitched to contact all night long. And, man, he was terrific. That was the best. That was his best performance.
Well, he saved the last two for a really important time. And, I think you got to appreciate that. All right, we're underway. Nick Pivetta will be our Fire Friday guest. He is scheduled right at the bottom of this hour. So stick around for that. Looking forward to talking to him. We've got all of our Friday stuff, including a wild and crazy countdown a little bit later in the program. Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby, Gwynn and Chris, so happy you're with us. It is finally a Friday. Away we go.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
City Connect Friday, also Friar Friday. 2:18 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, Matt Scraby. Nick Pivetta will join us at 2:30. So stay tuned for that. We're going to get to break here early. AJ Preller, the Padre GM, president of baseball operations, joined our good friends Ben and Woods this morning, and they peppered him with some questions. We're only going to get to one of them here because, as I said, Nick Pivetta's coming up at 2:30. We want to make sure we get to break in time. And so we'll cover the rest of the peppered questions at AJ Preller after the interview with Pivetta. But one of the themes of our good friends is the bunting,
bunt identity.
Bunt identity, yeah. Bunting identity.
We
that
called
has,
it, the I believe, on the on the roundtable yesterday, it was referred to as a bunting culture.
Bunting culture.
Bunt
culture. There
it
was.
Culture of the Padres.
That's bunt culture.
Yeah.
They asked maybe not bunt culture question, but they framed it in a way of small ball, team identity. Here's what A.J. Preller had to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of, you know, again, I think if you're going to win a World Series, you got to have a versatile offense that can do a lot. You know, if you're going to be the best team in the world, and I think from our standpoint, we've talked a lot about having the ability to beat you any number of ways in the last few years. I do think like playing a Petco. I think again, there's places where you can hit the ball out of the park at Petco. And what Petco doesn't do is it doesn't reward kind of a long fly ball, not well hit to the big part of the field. You know, there's some other ballparks that we go around the league and, you know, right center, left center, dead center, you don't quite have to square it up, especially at nighttime like you do at Petco. And I think that plays to, like, what championship offense looks like, which is, you know, the ability to put pressure on the other team, beat you a lot of different ways. You know, I think for us at times this year, it's been the fact that, yeah, if we're struggling to score some runs, you want to try to find a way to get your offense going. I think statistically, we talk about it internally. When we, you know, when we run and hit, when we start runners, when we, you know, get bunts down, when we steal bases, we've won a lot of games in the games that we've done those things together. And I think, you know, Tatis has always said, hey, small ball leading to big ball. I think that's the goal. You know, and I think at times you look at your personnel, you know, we feel like we have a lineup now that should be able to do, you know, a lot of everything. And, you know, I think that's what we're going to try to do here in the last couple of weeks. And that's, if the game calls for it, you want to be able to, you know, move a runner and execute, a fundamental baseball play that usually leads to runs, especially in October when they're hard to come by. And you want to be able to hit a home run, you know, and you know, I think that's what Vic and the group talks about all the time, and, you know, what that looks like to put yourself in those positions. And we've done it at times this year. We probably haven't done it enough overall as an offense. And, you know, if we're going to win, you know, my guess is we're going to do it more consistently here these last couple of weeks and into October.
Well, there you have it.
I thought he gave us a lot there.
What are you talking about, AJ? You don't know ball. You don't know ball. I just hear the people out there. And you can't bunt. You're wasting outs. And analytically, it's stupid. What Jackson Merrill did the other night was uncalled for. Here's the bottom line that I see. And AJ, you know, touched on this, Tony. The St. Louis Cardinals are 28th in baseball. They have 138 home runs. The Padres are 29th. They are 9 behind them. So unless the Padres start bombing some home runs here in the last 2.5 weeks, they are going to finish second from the bottom in home runs. The only team lower is the Pirates. I don't think that's an impossible thing to overcome if you hit well situationally. Right. And what AJ said is true. When they work together, when they make productive outs, Laureano the other night in the bottom of the ninth inning, I guarantee you he lost sleep over that pop-up to first base.
Oh, for sure.
Because he didn't, he made an out, but he didn't even get the guy to third, which is what we really needed. So, but when the Padres do that stuff, they win, and they don't need to have the home run to win. And I know everybody said it on the panel yesterday, except Scraby, tried to stick up for me a little bit, but hey, I think we got to go for the 3-run homer there with Jackson Merrill. Okay. Except for the Padres have only hit 9 of them all year. And I know I've been, you know, overstating that. But to wait for the 3-run homer, the Padres will be waiting a long time because they haven't been doing that. And
that's virtually what they did in that the last 18 innings of the division series last year.
Wait for the 3-run homer.
They were trying to get that.
Yeah.
And it turned into nothing burgers. So,
yeah,
I mean, I think we all knew that. You know, it may not be what people want to hear, but
no, they don't want to hear it. But
that's exactly what AJ was going to say the whole time. He was going to say that a good offense can do a little bit of everything. The problem is what you said, Chris. The Padres don't have, or at least through what, 100 and how many games we got left?
15 more.
15 left. Isn't that crazy? 15.
100 and what? 47
down.
Yeah, after 147 games, unless they're about to show us something that we haven't seen through the first 147.
Yeah,
they're not that. And so, should we just keep trying to do that, even though we're not that? Is that how it's going to work, and you're going to get it, or is it more likely that they're going to have to find other ways to score runs? And I think that's exactly what they've been doing.
Yeah. And that, you said yourself, Tony, correctly, that it probably was not a good time to bunt there.
It
Jackson
wasn't.
Should swing.
100%.
But we can see why the Padres have had bunting as part of their arsenal this year.
Right, and that doesn't mean if he's swinging away that he's now swinging for the homer at that point. He's just doing what Jackson's been doing the whole time.
Yeah.
So let's get to break, though, because Scraby is on my head about it. Nick Pivetta will join us shortly on the other side.
I just want to make sure we're ready for him.
he's giving me the break signal like 5 minutes ago. So.
I look at Chris, and he didn't see it, and I'm like, oh, my God, he's going to go talk about something for 40
Hang on
minutes.
A second. I had to ask you something.
Yeah. Can we go to break? Yes.
Let's go to break. More good to Chris on the other side.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
You know
Browns
why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And I wonder how that sounds to you.
Obviously, it's a great honor to be put in those terms. But, you know, I think my focus is just like winning for the team and winning for the organization. And I think when you kind of have those linear focuses and you're kind of just going about your business and it's team oriented, I think good things happen to everybody. You know, I was able to put the right work in the off season and coming into here, San Diego Padres. And, you know, things have turned out pretty good so far.
Nick, let's talk about the offseason and how free agency went for you. You ended up signing with the Padres really, really late, and I'm sure that's not ideal. But nonetheless, you've come out, and I mean, just go. What went into that free agency for you as it got towards the end there, and you were finally able to sign with a team?
Yeah, It was definitely an interesting process for me. I mean, I had the qualifying offer attached to me, so I think there's a lot of unknowns going into that process. But, you know, I just stayed patient, stayed focused. I worked out at Cressy's Performance Center in Jupiter, Florida. So, you know, I'm around baseball players all the time. And, you know, I think just working out with other guys and continuing to work on baseball and focus on that, knowing that I'm going to, you know, land somewhere. And, you know, gratefully and awesomely, like, you know, I landed with such a great organization, great group of guys at San Diego Padres. And, you know, I think I just stayed patient, just tried to stay sane-minded and knew that something would come my way. And, you know, luckily I landed in, you know, a great place, you know, led by AJ with Schilt and then Ruben, you know, and then the plethora of guys here that, you know, lead this team to so many wins, you know. And then, you know, also it's great to be part of a winning organization as well. It's a great gift as well. So the success that they had, it just, you know, I was very, very grateful for the opportunity.
Nick Pivetta is with us. He came right on the scene for the Padres here. I mean, he introduced himself to us with seven innings of one-hit ball in his first outing and haven't really looked back since. I think it's too simple to ask you if you felt like you had something to prove this year as a free agent, but I wonder if, you know, having to wait to be able to sign gave you just a little extra, you know, to say, hey, look, you know, there's everybody could have had me and nobody did until the Padres came around. Or have you just let all that go?
Yeah, I don't really look at it that way. You know, I think there's a lot of great organizations out there and, you know, so would it so be that, you know, they passed up on me? That's okay. I think I firmly believe that I landed in the right place for the right reasons. And, you know, I'm just happy to be here more in a sense. And it's not to prove anybody wrong or do anything else. It's more just my passion and wanting to be a great pitcher and wanting to be the best. And I want to beat the best and compete with great athletes and go about it that way. And, you know, I just have that pride and drive and I really want to win too. So I think all those things are just, you know, who I am, but it's mostly out of just winning for my teammates, for the organization. And then I want to play with the best players there are.
You've segued me now twice to the next question by your answer, and you mentioned your passion. I've said it multiple occasions that you take me back when I'm watching you pitch. You take me back to like my 15, 16 year old self watching Kevin Brown on the mound and his kind of intensity.
I mean, where is by the way, Tony? Same number.
Yeah, no, same number and everything, and that's part of why it hits my mind like that. Where has that intensity come from? Has that always been Nick Pivetta?
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, that's who I've been, but you know, you always want to emulate those great pitchers, whoever they are. We can go through the names and lists of all the great players. We don't have to right now, but like, I think you see that drive in them and you want to be as good as them or you want to be better than them. It's nothing out of ego or anything else. It's just like, why am I playing this game? Well, I just want to play this game to be a great baseball player and contribute too, to a team aspect, and win a World Series championship. I think those are the main goals. And I firmly believe if you just surround yourself and get yourself in winning situations, usually good things happen in the end. And, you know, success leads to that as well.
Nick, Tony touched on this. I mean, I think you represent a lot of us out on that mound. Just us normal guys who watch you pitch, and because we want you to get the out, and we feel like you want to get the out, and you're so passionate.
Yeah.
And we see you talking a little. What do you say? What are you saying? Can you give us a?
When I talk to myself on the mound.
Yeah. Is it clean enough for?
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's fine. It's mostly just like self reinforcement and positive attitude. It's always like just calming the moment too. I feel like there's numerous resets in an outing, and always finding that good reset to get into that kind of, that subconscious mode, that flow state, as you say, or will, when things are just kind of coming easy. And it's just kind of that kind of dance and battle and, you know, fun thing to find, but, you know, just self-talk, positive self-talk, and like just trying to keep myself very present in the moment of what's going on and making sure that I'm very present. I think being present is very important for me this year.
Nick Pivetta joins us, Padres starter, possible Cy Young candidate. And Nick, let me ask you, because, you know, as you've gone through your career, you've been regarded as a guy that the stuff doesn't match the numbers. This year you're having a career year. What for you has come together in order for you to have the success that you're having on the field in this particular season?
Yeah, I think it's like it's years of kind of experience, kind of getting me, you know, obviously starting in Philly and then kind of finding some building blocks in Boston, and then, you know, trying to figure out what the correct way to build a building is now. I think in that type of term, it's what is the foundation of it? For me, what I think about there is, I think limiting my walks as much as I possibly can is kind of like my safeguard. It's how many guys can I not walk? Okay, how do I not walk guys? How many times can I get ahead of guys? Okay, how many times, what pitches can I get ahead of guys? And how many times can I get ahead of guys through an order? So if you just like really filter through the sand, it's very specific things that lead up to bigger things. And I think it's, as we know, like being in the big leagues for, you know, the years that I have been, and very grateful for that, I've gotten a sense to kind of learn from it too and try to figure it out. And I've been given time in this game, which I'm very grateful for, to continue to learn those things and progress. And I think, you know, I've taken some really good steps forward. And I think, you know, obviously I can be much better than even what I was this year. And, you know, you kind of just try to see how that goes moving into next year as well.
Nick, we appreciate the time so much. I want to try to sneak one more in. I know you have a lot to
get
done.
Good.
Victoria, no, you're from Victoria, British Columbia, Canada, which is a place I've actually had a chance to go. And I was there with a hockey team. And, of course, Canada, it's hockey. So how did you grow up and get into baseball? Did you have to fight off the hockey coaches at all, or did you ever skate?
No, if I'm being blunt and honest, I wasn't the most athletic when I was younger, not the swiftest on skates, and I really didn't want to wake up at 6 a.m. for practice. So
okay.
I really enjoyed soccer, and I started to play soccer, and then I was playing baseball from a young age, just like Little League and having fun and doing that. And I just progressed from there, and I think when it started to get serious was when I was 16 years old. I met Greg Hamilton at a tournament in Okanagan, British Columbia, I believe, and he asked me to come be a part of the junior national team, and I think that's when things started to progress as a baseball player. I was about 16, 17, doing a lot of trips to the junior national team, going down to the Dominican Republic,
awesome.
And then doing going to Cuba, doing the World Junior Baseball Classic, and I think that just kind of set me on my road of, okay, this is baseball, and this is what I want to do, and I'm okay at it. I'm pretty good at it. I wasn't the greatest, but, you know, I had a little bit of a drive and some talent, and I just tried to figure it out step by step.
Nick, last one for me.
Yeah.
You get an opportunity to work with Ruben Niebla. He's regarded as one of the best. What is it for you that makes him a good pitching coach?
I mean, that's a really good question. I don't think there's really one thing. I think there's, you know, a number of things, but I think it's the way that he communicates to the players, the freeness that we have as players to kind of be ourselves and be creative and have fun. But then when we get into game time, it's what pitches can we throw? How are we going to execute our pitches? What homework are we going to do? So he keeps you in line, but then also when you get into a bullpen setting, it's very creative. It's very fun. And, you know, there's just that willingness to kind of tinker with certain things. And then also the knowledge to just kind of keep things where they need to be at times as well. So I think it's just his communication overall is really good, but his just baseball knowledge, the amount that he cares about the individuals, you know, the amount that he's learned from all of his past experiences and the way he's been able to communicate that to players is very, very sound.
Nick, we're having such a great interview here. I got to ask about the nose.
You're fine. I'm not in a rush.
All right, good. Well, I know we kind of talk. The Padre, you know, folks have tried to keep us at a certain time, and we try to, you know.
You're good. But don't worry about that.
The nose to toes curveball. I love this. We love watching it. I'm sure you enjoy throwing it. I know they don't like trying to hit it. Where do you give? Where do you go with some credit for that? Was it an early coach? Just something you were able to get the spin rate, or what?
Yeah. So when I was when I first made it to the big leagues, my pitching coach Bob McClure was there, and Aaron Nola had the same grip, and Aaron Nola just threw his curveball, and he said, "Why don't you throw this?" And I said, "Okay." So I just started to throw it. It worked with my arm angle. It wasn't really good earlier on, but then as I continue to throw into 2018, it kind of progressed more and more, and I think through 2019 and 2020 kind of tilted as I did. But as I continued to move and figure out, you know, as the Rapsodos came along and kind of figure out the numbers of it, how it works, why it works, the information behind tunneling and all of that, it kind of gives you more of a creative and like a third person view at it. So then I was able to kind of, you know, mess with it, do certain things with it, but then perfect it. And then after that, it's all about throwing strikes with it. So I have really good command with it, probably the best I've had in my career this year. So that's why it's kind of been a staple a little bit more for me now. And then obviously with the sweeper, it's taken a lot of, it's also helped that pitch get better as well.
Nick, really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for the time.
Yeah, no
man.
Problem. Appreciate you guys having me on.
All right,
pleasure.
Sir. Always best of luck the rest of the way. Can't wait to see you back on the hill.
Yeah, I'll see you guys soon. Okay, take care.
Very good. Nick Pivetta right there.
Fantastic.
Yeah, really fun. I had a bunch more questions. And if he would have kept saying it's okay, I probably would have kept asking them.
I was like, let's just keep him on for a half hour.
I was going to say we might be up at game time if I, you know, because I really had some fun stuff. And, you know, that's a surprise. I didn't really – I knew he was Canadian. I didn't know Victoria, British Columbia, because I have been there. That's a – you have to ride a
that's where my mother-in-law lives.
Really? Yeah, on the island right now?
Yeah.
Okay, so you got to ride the ferry to get over to Victoria. Like, it's not even part of the mainland. And it's kind of just away from everything. And I would just think baseball would be an interesting thing to pick up growing up on Victoria, British Columbia Island. You know, it just surprised me because everybody, they make you play hockey in Canada.
Hey, listen, the saying always says, if you can play, they will find you.
Yeah, right, yeah. And I like what he said. He goes, he didn't say this, but he goes, I'm a little dorky on skates. So,
he's tall.
Yeah, he's 6 foot Bambi. Five. So the skates thing didn't work for him, and he found something else.
I think he made the right choice.
I think so. He's a Valentine's Day baby, by the way. And but with that background, man, he is a bulldog on the mound. And
I loved his answer about he clearly acknowledged that he looks at those type of guys, whether it be Kevin Brown or whoever it was.
Yeah.
And he wants to be that same type of dude.
Yeah.
I love it.
That was my favorite.
The funniest part about last night's game that he pitched in was when the pitch comm wasn't working. My man Freddie came out, the bad boy. Freddie came out, and you could tell he was hesitant. He didn't want to get too close. He was like handing it off and then, like sliding over to the backside.
He did do this thing where he was like, "I just can't hear." He has this way about
Chad Fairchild tried to come out there, and he was like, "No, don't come out. We'll figure it out. Leave us. I got it."
Yeah.
Don't come out.
No. I'm going to shake this thing until it works.
Nick Pivetta has been my favorite this year just because I love pitchers that have conversations with themselves because they're a little out there just like me.
There was one point he threw a pitch that it was a ball for, and he was, or it might have been, it was just a ball, and he was pissed. Freddie Vermeen went to throw him the ball, and he just had his back. He walked all the way, like halfway between the mound and second, with his back turned, and was like, he was clearly having a conversation with himself. And then he turned it around, and then Freddie was finally able to throw him the ball. Freddie sat there for like, it felt like 30 seconds waiting to throw his baseball.
Didn't Nick Pivetta, I mean, along with the good pitching and getting off to, you know, a start and winning all these games, to me, his first real arrival on the scene was in that Giants game early in the year
when they were stealing the signs
and he looked back at the guy and then got the guy struck out. I think it was Yastrzemski struck him out and then basically followed Bailey back to the dugout and just said, I don't know what he said, but it's probably something along the line, you guys do whatever you want back there, I got you. And yeah. He was so geeked up, but I thought, that's the kind of guy I want representing my club. You know, you're not going to get away with that stuff with me. So that's the kind of guy we want. And he's been great this year. Pivetta, I didn't get into I had all the stuff lined up here. I hope he, I'm starting to hate Paul Skeens again. And, it's not Paul Skeens' fault. We've heard nothing but good things about what a good guy Paul Skeens is. But, it was his brilliance.
He could be standing in the way of another Cy Young.
Yes, he took away Jackson Merrill's rookie thing last year. And it's hard to argue against him this year, but, Pivetta certainly deserves to be in that conversation. And
for sure.
It looks like Skeens is probably going to win, and that's, the way it's going to go. And hopefully Pivetta ends up with something better than
At least this year, Paul Skeens deserves the award. Last year, Jackson Merrill deserved the award, so.
Yeah, well, that's what,
So.
Apparently nobody else agreed with you because Paul Skeens won.
Yes, he did, Chris. Yes, he did.
I'm sorry to say.
But I was watching some highlights of him the other day, and I was like, man, these guys can't even touch what he's throwing at them.
That curveball is big, Tony. Who was the biggest breaking? Did you face Blylevin at all or Kershaw? No, who would it be?
The biggest breaking ball from when I was playing, I was telling Jesse this maybe a couple months ago, Jason Isringhouse.
Oh, Isringhouse. I thought he was a flamethrower.
Well, he started off as a flamethrower. Then he went to the bullpen, and he had a hammer. Yak-yak.
Yak-yak. Yes. Double yak.
Like, yak here, yak there.
Yeah. Pivetta's is good, though, right? I mean, you'd have to rank it up there.
That's what it reminds me of Jason's, honestly. Yeah. Like, it's that big. It doesn't have, as a hitter, you're looking for that hump. If a pitcher throws you a curveball and that ball pops out of his hand, you see it immediately. But the thing about a guy like Isringhauser and Pivetta, they don't have that hump. It comes out of the hand, and it's just got crazy spin, and it's disgusting.
It's got to be hard to hit. One last little bio note on Pivetta for those who, kind of being introduced to him like we are. After he grew up in Victoria, British Columbia, and got into the baseball and ended up on a bit of a national team, Tony, he ended up from there at New Mexico Junior College. That just seems like a weird, next spot.
You go where you gotta go, Chris.
I guess, but who even knows there is a New Mexico Junior College in British Columbia?
I know my when I was at State, we had a pitcher from Canada, and I know that those JUCOs in Arizona and New Mexico, and those are all that's where some of those guys start, and before they end up at a big D1 somewhere or a D1, not necessarily big.
Well, I think he got picked straight from New Mexico Junior College. Did Nick Pivetta, and we had Mason Miller on. A few weeks ago, and he went to Gardner Webb. You're getting all of these all-star type players. I think it's a good lesson for any, young people out there. Sure, it'd be great to be recruited by, San Diego State or, UCLA or LSU or, one of those things and take that path. And you certainly can get there, but you can also get there by going to New Mexico Junior College or Gardner Webb. These guys are proof of it. And Tony said it. If you're good, they'll find you. And I think a lot of people, parents, I think, maybe even to a certain extent, feel like I got to get my kid more exposure and more games and more time and more travel ball and more this and more that. I got to keep up with the kid down the street. And even though I think, we appreciate what you're trying to do, don't ever lose sight of the fact that if your kid can play, they'll find you. They will just find you. You don't have to worry about getting extra attention. They'll locate you.
When I was in high school, I tried to convince my parents to let me transfer from Poway.
Oh.
For better basketball exposure.
Okay.
And I was like, nah, man, if you're good enough, they'll find you. Now, I wasn't good enough, which is why they didn't find me.
I see what you're saying. No,
but,
right.
It's the kind of the same deal. It's no different like going to San Diego State. At that time, San Diego State wasn't putting out a ton of, prospects. But if you're good enough, you go out, you take care of business, you can make it happen.
Yeah, they'll find you. That's a good lesson for everybody to keep in mind. Let's just switch up here for a second before you go, Tony. You sent out something, and is you speaking of Poway? Do we have time for it or no?
Are we talking about Greg Olson?
Yeah.
I think, Tony, you're able to stay for the 3 p.m., right? We're doing this on the air right now.
yeah, I can stay for 3 p.m.
Okay, because I'm going to get the video so that we can play it.
Because it goes along with what Tony's talking about and what we're talking about here and getting, recruited and where you're going to go to college and all that. Greg Olson had some really interesting things to say about NIL and stuff. He's still the Fox commentator, is he not?
He's just not the number one guy
because Brady had to get
I know,
the job.
I don't understand why people are still asking him questions about it. It's already been one full season as this number two guy, and he's not going to say anything bad about Tom Brady.
He doesn't need to, but I'll say this. He's way better than Tom Brady. To me, it's not even close.
I like Tom. Okay. I do. I think
fair.
That Tom teaches me stuff. And Greg Olson teaches me stuff, too.
I haven't locked in yet on Tom like that.
I'm telling you, last year, sat down and just listened to him.
I mean, I can't remember it last year, honestly. The few times I did.
Last year he did this. He was on a 49ers game, and they were talking about on the last drive, you take how many yards you need to go, and you divide it by how many seconds you have left, and that's how many plays you got. And I was like, that's interesting. Tom Brady's telling me how to formulate a game-winning drive. I think that's interesting.
That is interesting.
Chris is not interested at all.
Chris doesn't seem all that interested.
Mike says Brady sounds condescending. I don't get that.
I agree with you, Mike. He sounds like he's talking down to us. Olson,
this is a lifelong Dolphins fan who's had his team beat by Tom Brady a million times.
Not at all, because I appreciate the greatness of Tom Brady as much as almost anyone. And I watched him in all those Super Bowls, and I rooted for him in most of them. So that's actually not true. I'd give it to you if it was, but it's not.
Greg Camarillo said Tom Brady not ruined his career, but made his career tough because he never could get the division because the Patriots won every year.
Let's be honest, the Miami Dolphins weren't winning the division anyway.
No, they even did go 1-15.
even if the Patriots sucked.
Camarillo, we love you, though, man. We'll always love you. Always have a place in Dolphin lore.
I think it's awesome. I always tell Greg that it's awesome that he beat Ed Reed to win that game. Like, that's awesome. And then he'll always say, well, I did have fresh legs, and it was overtime, so...
Doesn't matter. He did it, and I jumped up and down as a result because they were 0-11 at the time, or maybe even 0-13. They were getting real close to the winless season that year. All right, we'll get to Greg Olson and some of his comments about the NIL stuff. Gives us a second to touch on the football last night, Tony. Green Bay looks like the real deal to me. It's only two games, but they dominated the Lions, a really good team, and they dominated the Commanders, a really good team. Both games, the Packers shut these two teams down until it was garbage time. That's just, to me, not easy to do. And I think Green Bay looks really the part, even though it's too early to crown them.
I'm telling you, Jerry has really stepped in it this time. This is only going to get worse.
Oh, Jerry Jones, yeah.
Yeah, the ultimate can only be that they face off against one another in the playoffs.
I don't think the Cowboys are going to make it, unfortunately. But yeah.
I mean, you might be right. I think the Cowboys are actually better than I thought they would be. But it's clear that that defense is playing with a different swag. Even if Parsons isn't necessarily like having the physical impact, they're playing like they know they have a pass rusher back there that is going to limit the amount of time a quarterback has to get rid of it. And then the offenses, I think I've always thought since maybe Love's first year that he's going to be good. He's going to be all right one way or other. It may not look as pretty as Aaron Rodgers was looking at the early stages, but he just looks like he's going to be all right.
Did you see that thing real quick? Each quarterback in the Packers won their Super Bowl when they were 27, and Jordan Love is 27. So Bart Starr won. He was 27. Brett Favre won. He was 27. Aaron Rodgers won. 27. Jordan Love is 27 this year.
Well, if they played the Super Bowl next week, I would pick the Packers.
Me too. They look amazing.
They really do.
I saw something incredible about the Packers. I'll explain it on the other side in terms of their uniforms. I don't know if you guys saw this. It was pretty cool.
The winter uniforms in September?
Do I sound too nerdy if I say they were lit? I thought I would.
We'll let everybody sit with that.
I thought I would. Coming up on hour number two.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.